A deal. Yes. Is this thing over? Far from it.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich, in for Jeremy Hobson. The Senate rang in the new year around 2 a.m. by pushing through a fiscal cliff compromise.
The yeas are 89, the nays are 8. 60-vote threshold hasn't been achieved. The bill, as amended, is passed.
Among the highlights, the deal permanently raises income taxes for individuals making more than $400,000 a year. It delays, for just 2 months, most of those automatic spending cuts that were set to kick in. But the House has not yet passed the bill. It will convene to consider it, or maybe even amend it, as early as noon Eastern time today. The IRS is one of the agencies most affected by the fiscal cliff uncertainty. Until a final deal is closed, it looks like the 2013 tax season could be a tumultuous one. Marketplace's Eve Troe reports.
Los Angeles accountant Jeffrey Otto says the calls have been fast and furious.
It all boils down to what the heck is going to happen.
He doesn't know. The AMT, the estate tax, it's all still up in the air. So he and his clients have focused on what they can control, cramming income and assets onto the books for 2012. It's no use calling the IRS for help anyway.
Their computers are down for maintenance.
Tax scholar Katie Price at Loyola Law School says, with 90,000 employees, the IRS is not a nimble operation. It takes weeks to reprogram its computers and print new forms. The IRS may not be ready to process returns until March, meaning crunch time gets shorter, way more crunchy.
March 20th to April 15th crunch, unless Congress decides to extend the deadline for filing, which would be unprecedented.
She says uncertainty makes the IRS more, well, taxed. With less time to do the same amount of work, things slip through the cracks, and that leads to more tax fraud. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Stock markets around the world are closed today for New Year's. Yesterday, some 10 hours before the Senate passed its fiscal cliff bill, the S&P 500 index closed up 1.7% on hopes of a deal. The Dow Industrial Average jumped 166 points yesterday and ended the year up more than 7%. That's the fourth year in a row of gains. There are rumors the chipmaker Intel could roll out a TV set-top box next week at the Consumer Electronics Show. This would be Intel's second run at this kind of thing. So why is it so intent on getting its hardware into your living room? Here's Marketplace's David Weinberg.
PC sales are down. For chipmaker Intel, that's not good. So the idea is that by making a TV set-top box, they will create new demand for their hardware.
That's a nice best-case scenario, but think of how many new devices come out every year and how few actually get sold.
Dan Rayburn is a vice president at StreamingMedia.com. He's skeptical of Intel's ability to turn a profit because in order to be successful, Intel will need content, which is not cheap.
I mean, look at Netflix. They're spending billions of dollars a year, and they're not even profitable this year and probably not next year either.
But according to Gus Richard, a senior research analyst at Piper Jaffray, Intel may be entering into the TV market for a different reason. Patents it owns from its purchase of the security software company McAfee. With those patents,
you could provide a way to proliferate content where somebody can't steal it or it becomes far more difficult to steal.
That would make Intel's hardware very attractive to content providers who are worried about piracy.
You know, if you could fix that problem, right, that's a huge value.
The key word there is if. I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
The latest batch of student test scores in December was not terribly encouraging. U.S. students still sit well behind their global peers when it comes to math, science, and reading. Educators continue to experiment, trying to find formats that engage kids and help prep the workforce of the future. One new private school near Minneapolis offers a particularly Minnesota-style approach. Northern Educate Hockey Academy opened in 2011. This year it has 90 students from kindergarten through 12th grade, including 10 girls. On the day I stopped by, older students were in a quiet room above the rink, working one-on-one with tutors, and down on the ice, younger ones were drilling with the coaching staff. That's where I talked to Sean Black, the former Air Force pilot who moved here to launch the school. Four of his own kids are enrolled.
Typical day is they show at 7:30 in the morning on ice for 3 hours, and then they go to athletic development after that for an hour, and then they go to class for the rest of the day till approximately 4 o'clock.
If you talk to somebody in Minnesota, they might be like, oh, yeah, hockey, school, makes sense. But for people from outside hockey country, give some context of why, for some families, these two things are a really critical combination.
What we've found is that when you make the combination of their passion, which is their sport, you also apply the academics and show why the academics are at least as important to them as their sport. That's what the families want, because they want their kids in an environment where everybody's striving for success. And this doesn't just teach hockey. It teaches life skills of, you know, hard work, effort, sacrifice by your family. All of those things come into being a success in life.
Of the kids coming in and their parents, do many of them sort of expect that hockey is their future career path, or do they just see this as a path to having them like school and be successful in school?
I know for a fact that I don't believe any family here believes their kid is the, you know, the next Gretzky or any of that. That's not the point. What they, again, all of them want is their kids to be in a place where their kids have an opportunity to succeed in life. And the one thing we know for a fact is eventually that hockey career will stop, however long it is, and they'll need to go back to their community and back to you know, the academic piece that led them.
You could do this for hockey. You could do this for other sports. You could do it for the arts, arguably. You know, like an arts magnet school does kind of the same thing. Is this sort of a frontier in education that you think is discovering something new?
Yeah, I mean, we've been approached by national federations on different sports to take this concept and put it to those sports, and we're going to do that. Anything that gets the kids to where they believe in academics and they believe in being a good person and believe in being a community leader, and we think we have that combination. We know it works here. We know it'll work for other sports, and so we're going to pursue all those different opportunities to still allow other kids and other families that option.
Sean Black, president of Northern Educate Hockey Academy in Eagan, Minnesota. Make one of your online stops today, our Marketplace Guide to the Fiscal Cliff. We are updating it constantly at marketplace.org. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
You may not realize it, but personal trainers need to be certified too. But the industry goes largely unregulated.
In the course of this conversation, you and I could be certified by about a dozen different certification organizations as long as we had internet access and a good credit card.
I'm Sarah Gardner. Finding the right certified personal trainer is more difficult than you may think. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.